I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Paula Todd joins me now, the investigative journalist and broadcaster, has a new book out, Extreme Mean, Trolls, Bullies, and Predators Online. It's a groundbreaking book that looks at how cyber abuse online is wreaking havoc on the lives of children, youth, and adults in this country and beyond. The deaths of Amanda Todd and Rataya Parsons have brought all this to the fore. And this book looks deeply at what happened, and as well as the greater impact on the media, the internet, and our society. It's not often a pleasant book to read, but it's a necessary one. I'll get Ms. Todd, who joins me now from here in Vancouver, to tell us about what she's uncovered in the course of writing this book, why so much bullying and harassment seems to be commonplace online, and what we can all do, whether we're parents or not, to understand and address a nefarious abuse that's just a click away. Paula Todd is a lawyer and a professor of journalism and digital media at Seneca College. ExtremeMean.com is the website for more. She's on Twitter. Her handle is @Paula_Todd. The book is published by Signal, which is an imprint of McClelland and Stewart. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Paula Todd. Ms. Todd, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for giving some time to this critical issue right now.
Yeah, as I was telling you before we started, this isn't a pleasant book to read. What's it like for you, having written it, having had to research it and the sort? I'm assuming that it must have been exhausting, to say the least. Icky at times?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I had to go some places and read harassment, misogyny, racism. You know, I saw revenge porn sites, which are filled with the intimate images of women and girls who, of course, had their pictures taken, never suspecting that somebody would turn on them and post them. There were times that I got really, really depressed. But ironically, it made me push on to try to understand who is doing this and what effect it's having on us. And one of the interesting things is, whether you are online a lot, or even a little, this is affecting our society significantly, because the more we are all, as an audience, we see this abuse, the more depressed we get, the more it adds to already existent mental health issues. So you say it's not, you know, obviously not pleasant to read some of the things I quoted. Nevertheless, that's what's online. That's what your kids are seeing, and that's what you, as an adult, are being exposed to. It's really necessary right now for us to understand who is doing this, why they're doing it, because when we do, we are going to find solutions.
Now, is it a question of, say law enforcement's job to help police this? I mean, or have you found that law enforcement across the country aren't equipped with the resources or, say, the knowledge to deal with this? Are our laws not up to date even?
Well, listen, I mean, law enforcement has had the same experience as everybody else. It's really only 2 decades since we've had mass access to the Internet. And it seems so much longer than that, because it has changed our world in every way. And so, naturally, people are turning toward the police. You know, if it's illegal offline, it needs to be illegal online. But police are not equipped. Now, some of them are. I mean, I visited in Norway, Interpol, and I've talked with some of the more sophisticated internet policing teams. And a lot of money and a lot of intelligence has gone into that. But we have literally been caught off guard, all of us. And the police are no exception. The other thing is the breadth and depth, the permanence, the 24-hourness of online abuse means no police force is ever going to be able to succeed in stopping this. What my research has shown, though, is that this is a social problem. It's a mental health problem. So we need far more than police officers to be doing something about the problem.
Now, in your reporting on all of this for this book and elsewhere, let's take the Amanda Todd case in particular, because it's literally close to home here in Vancouver.
Yes.
Could law enforcement have done a better job? Would she be alive today if there were resources in place, not only with law enforcement, but, say, people that were monitoring, say, what was going on with her online or listening to her and whatever she was complaining about?
Yeah, the first thing I'll say about that is there is no right now research. It's not finding a direct causal link between cyberbullying and suicide, as many people have said in the Amanda Todd case. Her mom, Carol Todd, is very, very adamant about us recognizing that Amanda had some vulnerabilities. She had some language-based learning disabilities, and a lot of things had been going wrong for Amanda. But what I present in the book that has never been seen before is the actual Facebook accounts of her peers clearly bullying Amanda Todd. And the reason I'm doing this is I want you as a community to take a look at what some of these young kids are saying, one in particular, and ask yourself, you know, we've got a mental health issue there, and we need to be doing something about it. Now, your second question, which is, could somebody have prevented Amanda Todd's suicide? That's obviously beyond my capacity to analyze. But what we do have is an RCMP force in British Columbia that sat, was very, very silent about what was going on in this case, even though Amanda had been reporting both online and offline abuse. The RCMP and their conference, and I'm sure you were there and you covered it, said very clearly that they didn't want to risk what had been an ongoing investigation. And now, of course, we have a man in the Netherlands who has been charged with, among other things, you know, sexual extortion and internet luring, all sorts of things. But what we need to speak to, and obviously that case has to go to trial, but I do think we're within our rights by asking, in those 2 years, while Amanda Todd and her mother and her father were reporting this abuse, could more have been done? And since the RCMP right now won't tell us what they did or what they currently are doing, that's hard to judge. But it's important for people to keep that in mind as this case, continues to develop.
The other thing that I found interesting in reading your book was the abuse that Carol Todd, Amanda's mother, is getting, even now, right?
Yes, I mean, I was so startled. I saw that online first. It was one of the many reasons that I decided to try and figure out what was the true cause of this cyber abuse. Carol Todd, who is still, of course, struggling to deal with the suicide of Amanda, is still being targeted online by, you know, not even that many people, but the internet allows is very tenacious, is very nasty, and in some cases, the mentally unwell, to appear like a majority. And what I'm hoping to do with Extreme Mean is that I'm going to introduce you to the secret life on the internet so that you can be better positioned to judge what's going on and to put it into context. What's important is, going into the research, like many people, I thought that anonymity was the reason that people were doing what they were doing. But I had a problem with that because I know a lot of people who do wonderful things anonymously. And in fact, what I've discovered is that anonymity is an accomplice, but it isn't the reason, the sole reason, people are compelled to go online and do terrible things to each other. There are mental health issues. As I said, we've got to come to terms with this. People are drunk. They are high. They are angry. They've lost their jobs. They've lost sight of what it means to be online. They don't realize that they're hurting people. Some kids are just trying to attract attention. And what's really groundbreaking in this book is I realize that a lot of times when we're online and we're motivated to do something harmful, if we disassociate from the people that are at the other end of our keyboard, we find ourselves in a state that's similar to being a psychopath. We don't care about the people because we can't see or feel them. And we'd be willing to do anything to meet our needs. We also have everyday sadists and everyday psychopaths online as it is, Joe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The other thing that worries me about your book in terms of how people will see this, I mean, you're going across the country talking about it. People will think, parents perhaps, that it's time to unplug the computer, keep our kids offline. That's not what you suggest in the book at all.
No, in fact, I suggest completely the opposite. And the book, while it's got, I mean, the book is truth. And, yeah. You know, we don't win by turning our heads away from the truth. But what I'm arguing is that taking kids away from their devices, you know, obviously, you don't want them on sites like Ask.fm where they're being abused, and you don't want them particularly online all the time because research is showing us that you can become addicted and that depression escalates the longer that you're online and you're seeing this sort of stuff. But if we don't teach not just our kids and our teens, but ourselves, that the internet is a place where we all should be, we're going to be abandoning the internet to cyber abusers. So what I'm encouraging, and you know, the last part of the book is actually very uplifting, is I believe that armed with the real knowledge of what's going on online, we can put this behavior in context. We can get the people who need help help, and more than anything, we can help explain that what people are doing when they're attacking, it's all about them, and it's not about us.
I guess parents did abdicate responsibility in terms of finding out or even learning about the technology that their kids were using. They used it, I guess. I'm 32, and my parents weren't internet savvy at all. And growing up in the last 20 years or so. So obviously they wouldn't know how these things work online, right?
Well, what ended up happening, I don't think blaming anybody is going to get us anywhere. Although I would say that if you're a parent or an educator or an adult right now and you are not doing what you can to understand the power of the internet, then you really are being irresponsible. But we've really only been with the internet available for mass use for just a few decades. And it didn't come with a manual. It was developed as a military way of communicating during times of nuclear threat. It was taken to a mass market by geeks and scientists who wanted to use it as a way to share scientific information. But what ended up happening is a lot of companies moved in. Kids who took to it more easily than parents, in part because video games were there. Yeah. And, you know, MSN messaging was there. So kids set the early tone online. And to a certain extent, they're still using it like the toy. In some ways, what parents did, yeah. I mean, it was like sitting your kid in front of a television. And did that prove to be, difficult? Yes, because parents and mature people were not online to help set the tone, too. But it's not too late. We can still do it. But you have to understand what you're up against. And that's why I wrote Extreme Me.
Now, is there a an age where you should if you're two, should you be online or using say a phone or anything like that, or should you wait till you're much older, perhaps?
What I say to parents is, it's your choice. Those are family decisions, but you shouldn't be making them without understanding what's going on. I've seen toddlers, everywhere, being babysat by their iPads. Uh-huh. Great for eye-hand coordination, fantastic for learning. I've seen them where kids are having difficulty learning how to speak. They can just touch their iPads and the words and the sound. I mean, much like, we've had, but in a much more sophisticated way. But if you are letting your kid, or if you, because this book is for adults and it's about adults, if you go online and you don't have an idea about what you're doing and you don't recognize what's happening to you psychologically and physiologically, uh-huh. then you are really letting yourself and your family down.
That's the other thing. There's a chapter in the book about this culture developing of the bystander who does nothing. And in the book, among some of the chats that you quote, like LULZ, I didn't know what that meant. Ask.fm. I don't know what that is. Snapchat.
Oh,
I don't
wow.
even know. And this is sort of my generation. This is what we've been using over the years. So I'm sure that there are a lot of people that don't know what those things are. But would you talk about this culture of the bystander that's developing? Because I find that very profound, very interesting.
Yeah. First thing I'd like to say is, you do it for the lulz, LULZ, which is humor at somebody else's expense. These words are widely understood by the younger generation, and we need to know because they're building the culture. One of the things I've tried to do in the book is give a snapshot. Like, you read this, you're going to know what's going on. You're going to know, what is going on. But here's a significant piece of research, and I've looked at international studies. You know how there's we call them bystanders who hang around, a recess fight. Maybe some people are saying stop, others are saying go, go, go. It turns out that the people who hang around lurking or watching cyber abuse are doing more damage than a traditional bystander, not just to the abuse and the target, but to themselves as well. The more we see of this cyber abuse, and believe me, ask young people in your life. They've seen it, and they know about it. 95% of young people, according to a Pew Institute study in the United States, have observed people being cyber abused. What makes it worse online? One, we could be exposed to it 24/7. It's public. It's permanent. It can be reignited. But when we like this stuff, when we share this stuff, even if we write LOL, oh, that's really funny, thinking it's all benign because this stuff looks like entertainment, it's not real life, we are making the cyber abuse worse. And the prediction is that if we would all stop looking at this as entertainment, realize there are real people at the end of it who deserve empathy, and stop sharing and trafficking in people's grief, we would go a long way ourselves to stopping the cyber abuse.
I'm sure people have told you on this book tour, Paula, that the idea that there's always been bullying, there's bullying in the schoolyard, there's bullying in the workplace, that it's just moved online. But I think there's something deeper, and well, you'll tell me if I'm wrong or not, that our discourse, that our society has become less civil.
I think that you're right. And in fact, there's a chapter particularly for educators and people who are really concerned, healthcare providers who are concerned about this debate about, you know, whether cyber abuse is the same as cyberbullying. I went to Norway and I interviewed the expert in traditional bullying who has been saying that cyberbullying is just an extension. And what I learned is that he doesn't use social media, that he doesn't go online, that he doesn't have any idea what's happening. And so that goes a long way to explaining, I think, why people are trying to see cyberbullying and to see traditional bullying and cyber as one and the same thing. It has to do with a lack of exposure, and it's you know, you got to catch up here. The internet is the most profound thing that's happened to us and is going to be happening to us for quite a long time. So if you're interested in knowing the differences and why cyber abuse can be particularly problematic, then you do need to read this book.
Do you find that young people or younger people, because of technology, have become less empathetic?
Well, the scientific studies are now suggesting that the less time that you have to yourself for reflection, the harder it is to develop empathy, which, you know, human beings, most of them, if they're not psychopaths and sociopaths, are born with the capacity to develop empathy. But we have to help this along. So if the kids are being completely dominated, all of their time being taken up by the instantaneous addictive nature of the internet, not getting that kind of reflective time. But my point is, and it goes a bit to your thought about negative discourse, adults and young people and kids who are constantly exposed to what in many cases is just the ravings of people who are copying each other, young kids who are trying to say dirty words. Remember the dirty words?
Yeah.
Remember looking in, you know, I didn't do this, but I've told a lot of guys did, look in the Simpsons catalog or the Sears catalog at all the bra ads. Well, now they're doing it online, but they're being joined there by a nefarious group of people who are disproportionately attracted to the internet to do something bad. And all of that is influencing our discourse and the way we're seeing the world. My point is, these decisions are being made by default. If the rest of us don't get online and understand what's happening, once we do, I believe, as a majority, we can assert a really positive influence and take back the internet for that which it was created, to share our intelligence, to evolve as human beings, to become more humanitarian. But we have to understand what's going on from the other perspective before we can do that.
Now, does the Harper government's bill, I think it's C-13, do you think that does anything to address any of this?
Well, the federal government's C-13, you know, on the one hand, there's a piece of legislation there that, if passed, would make it illegal to pass around, to tweet and, you know, to email the intimate images of somebody who hasn't agreed to have their intimate images shared. And this is a huge problem. The misogyny online towards girls and women is outrageous. And again, it's being done by a targeted group of individuals. So if that part of the law were to, you know, to become the status quo, then it could be very helpful. Unfortunately, the Harper government tacked on about 65 pages that goes towards making it easier without a warrant for all of the people who collect your online surfing data, as well as anybody who's received. People don't understand this, but if you read the legislation, it doesn't refer to telecom companies. Mm-hmm. It refers to people, to individuals. So, you know, my feeling about that back end of Bill C-13 is it could actually lead to more cyber abuse. But, you know, Joe, we just had a Supreme Court of Canada decision in our versus Spencer, which has stated very clearly that people have a right to privacy, and if the state wants to surveil what we're doing, they need a search warrant, and that's a good check and balance.
Now, I understand that this is the first of two books that you're writing for your publisher. Is that correct?
Yes, Random House came to me with the proposal and a two-book deal. So this is my third book, but it's the first one for Random House, and I have already started on the second one.
Well, will it be a little more pleasant to read, perhaps?
Yes, it'll be pleasant, and all I can tell you is that it's about sex.
Ah.
But in a way that you won't have to hide in the bathroom to read it.
Well, maybe
you will. I don't know.
Well, this book, as I said off the top, it's not an easy book to read, but it's one that you need to read, that everyone needs to read. And so congratulations on writing it. And I hope it does well, because a lot of people need to pick this up and understand what you've written about.
Well, yeah, and some people have told me it reads like a mystery. So the good thing is, even though you're going to be... you're going to find out what's really going on online, and some of that is going to be just comforting. Apparently, it's a really fast read, so you can do it, people.
Yeah, and it's been fun talking to you. I've been a big fan of yours for years, so thanks for that.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
The website for more, extrememean.com. The book is called Extreme Mean, Trolls, Bullies, and Predators Online. It's from Signal, which is an imprint of McClelland & Stewart. Its author, Paula Todd, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Ponto.